This panel is Justice for All. This is about advocacy and the advocacy cases that we work on here in Indiana. And up first to present to you her case is Jessica Sutherland.
Okay. First off, I would like to say this is my first time ever coming to an NFB meeting convention, and I am absolutely loving it. You guys have all inspired me totally. Just seeing you all has inspired me and made me want to change totally. Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and tell you a little bit about what's going on. First, I would like to take this time to thank God for this opportunity to be here and to speak to you all about my life and my story. I am so grateful and appreciate the time and help that the NFB has given to me and to my daughter. My story begins when I was born. I was born with a medical condition called hydrocephalus, which is basically where your ventricles in your brain don't develop properly, so the fluid on your brain doesn't drain properly. So they had to put a shunt in my head that went from the top of my head into my stomach to drain the fluid. And they did that. They found out when I was about 8 to 9 months old that I had the hydrocephalus. I did my first surgery to have it put in then. And if I wouldn't have had the surgery, I basically would have died from all the pressure in my head. And so I had that in. The shunt in for 21 years. I lived a normal life. I went to school, graduated 2013. I was 9 months pregnant when I graduated, by the way. And I mean, I played softball. I traveled everywhere. You know, I did everything normal. And then I found out I was pregnant November 12th of 2012 with my daughter, Aubrey. And at first I was scared. I was worried, you know, young mother, 19, didn't know what to do, didn't know what I was going to do. But I knew I had to step up and do what I had to for her. So she was born June 29th of 2013. And after that, a couple months later, me and her father decided that we would get married and we'd have a family. And so we got married September 29th, 2013. And we were both happy at that time. And then around August of 2015, I became really, really sick. I had migraines. I was vomiting. I couldn't even keep water down. And then my vision, I started losing my vision. So I called my mom, and before I called her, I actually went to multiple different hospitals to try to figure out what was wrong. Nobody could figure it out. Then they started thinking I was just drug seeking. So they told me to leave. Well, then I finally talked to my mother and told her that I was losing my vision, and she told me that was a sign of my shunt malfunctioning. So when she told me that, I immediately went up to Eskenazi Hospital in Indianapolis. They did a thing called a shunt tap where they basically take a needle, they stick it in my valve of the shunt at the top of my head to see if any fluid will come out. And obviously it did not. And so I had to have a valve replacement surgery, which was basically a brain surgery. And that worked for about 2 weeks, and then the symptoms started coming back, the migraines, the vomiting, vision loss. So I had about three more surgeries after that to replace the valve, and every single time my body rejected it. And then after that, I ended up, after the last surgery, I ended up having to take the whole shunt out because I ended up with spinal meningitis. And the shunt was infected. So they took the shunt out, and they told me that I should be dead or a vegetable right now. And So since they took that shunt out, the fluid that was on my brain didn't know where to go, so it went behind my eyes, and it put pressure on my optic nerves. So it killed parts of my optic nerves. I can still see, just not very well. And then after that, I went to an eye doctor, eye specialist, and he told me to try to take some water pills to see if that would help drain the fluid for a few months. So I did that, and it did not work. My vision got worse. And then after that, the doctor said there was a surgery I could do on my eyes to basically cut little windows in the back of my eyes to drain the fluid. And so I did that, and it worked. My vision was stable, and every time I've been back to the eye doctor, my vision's gotten better. They told me that would never happen. In a million years, they said that would never happen. I've actually been now, they told me I'd never drive again. I've been approved to drive during the day. and then, well, in about August of 2018, my husband at the time told me one day randomly he wanted a divorce. I didn't know why. He never told me why. And he told me he was going to go file. And he took weeks and weeks and weeks to do that. And then, so I finally, I had to go do it myself because he was being impossible to live with. So I went and filed. Me and my daughter moved in with my parents, who I am so grateful for and love them to death just for everything they've done for me and for my daughter. And so we ended up having our preliminary hearing in September of 2018. And I asked for full physical custody of my daughter. Her father asked for joint 50-50. And so, you know, me, my family, my lawyer at the time, we all thought there was no way that I would not get custody of my daughter. I've been a stay-at-home mom since she was two after I got sick. I've done everything. I clean, I cook, I do laundry, I bathe her, I do her homework, I put her on and off the bus. I do everything for her. And so we thought, you know, I was going to get full custody. And, of course, I didn't. We ended up with the 50-50. Then in February 20th of 2019, we went for our final hearing. And I still asked for the same thing that I wanted, the full custody. And my ex-husband, he asked for full physical custody. He changed his mind and asked for it. And we thought, again, there's no possible way, but the judge decided to give her father full custody. And his reasoning for that when I got the order was because my disability could present issues with safety and security of my child and could also present issues with my ability to parent. So I sent those orders to Valerie in Baltimore, and she told me that they were going to all discuss whether I was discriminated against or not. It took a couple weeks, and I got a call. I was totally discriminated against. And I remember discussing with Ron on the phone, and I was in tears, heartbroken, and didn't know what to do. And I was talking to Ron and his wife, and they told me they were going to help me get my daughter back. And I had an appeal. We won the appeal. And so I have an appeal date for this whole case, December 2nd of this year. And we are going to have blind advocates there to help me to prove I can parent. Just because I'm disabled doesn't mean I can't do it. And I refuse to give up on this as a mother, as a woman, as a disabled person. Nobody, male, female, mother or father, should have to go through something like this just because they're blind or vision impaired.
There you go. Yeah.
So this fight is far from over. I've lost battles, but I'm not going to lose the war. So I thank you all for letting me tell you my story. And like I said, I've been enjoying my time here. I love it. I plan on coming back. so thank you, everyone, and God bless.
She said it right. We may lose a fight, but we won't lose the war. That's for sure. We may lose a battle. All right, up next, Chris Myers, and he's going to tell us about his advocacy case. Let's go, Chris.
All right. All right, let's see where this is at. There we go. Morning, everybody. All right, I'm here to talk about the case that we have, well, I'm here to talk about a number of things, and I'll try to just give you guys a bit of background on myself and how advocacy in the blindness community is a lifelong endeavor. And I want to call what I have to say here seeking equality and finding hope. So for me, blindness in early childhood was mostly a negative experience. I was born legally blind, visually impaired, whatever you want to call it. I'll just say blind. And I, at a very young age, was taught that blindness and adapting to it was a negative thing that I needed to somehow feel less about myself for. So, unfortunately, there was some family and community around me when I was young who taught us that it was who belittled blindness and put shame, who attached shame to blindness. And I think this is something that many of us can relate to, especially if we grew up with blindness. My two siblings and I, who are blind, we grew up in a different country. We grew up in Germany for the first 5 to 7 years of our lives. And that was, at the time and still today, blindness is seen in a bit different light in Germany. It tends to be very overprotective and paternalistic view of disabilities, where services are provided but opportunity isn't really given. So I just want to say that my experience starting out with blindness before I found the Federation was that it was mostly a negative experience, and that for me, blindness became, I had all these feelings of being trapped. So I think that I want to set that stage for you guys so that you understand how much hope has been found through involvement with the Federation. So in the year 2000, we're skipping forward to my family having lived in the U.S. by that point for less than a year. And just imagine little 6-year-old Christopher, who unfortunately had way too much energy and curiosity for any one educator to manage. The public school system didn't know what to do with 3 blind kids. So what does this public school system do when they don't know what to do with 3 blind kids who show up? They try to send them somewhere else to the quote-unquote professionals. Unfortunately, the professionals often don't have a clue what you really need because they haven't lived that experience. So discussion that turned into a disagreement, that turned into a fight for where are we going to put these 3 blind kids. The my mom was pretty sure that sending her kids to the school for the blind and having them on the bus 4 hours a day or in a residential program where they might not actually receive their all the opportunities wasn't going to be the best. So she looked for help, and the Federation, along with a couple others, stepped forward and filled that gap. So I guess at 6 years old is really my first experience of advocacy and the power of the Federation. We had a lawsuit that was won in our favor, and we were able to stay at the public schools and receive Braille instruction and all of the technology that we needed. So We saw victory there. I continued to work through all of my own internalized misconceptions about blindness. It took me a lot longer than some. I think many of us may relate to that. I fortunately had some really good role models in my sisters, older sisters, Tobia and Sarah, who just modeled positivity and embracing their experience. So a shout out to them. And by 2011, I was about to graduate high school, and I had my next big fight on my hands, which was I could realize that at that point that I was not ready for to go directly to college, and that I started looking around for options. I located the NFB training centers because it was the most positive view of blindness that I could find. And remember that coming out of this really negative first couple years, I needed positivity. I needed hope. And I had been looking for equality through my whole public school experience, and the positivity of the Federation was what provided that hope. So President Brown and others provided me with a lot of insight into fighting a vocational rehab case to get to Blind Inc. in Minnesota. That took a couple months, and against the quote-unquote better judgment of another professional voc rehab counselor, we won that case. So I guess we'll just skip forward now to today. We have some work to do here in Indiana. You may know that Indiana isn't exactly the most progressive state in the union. Ron said it dawned on us just a little bit ago. So we're here to continue the work of the Federation, and it's a joy to do that. It's a joy for me, especially as somebody who has been really blessed. And so what are we doing? What am I involved in? Well, I can say that I graduated from college last May 2018 with a public administration degree. Thank you. And I soon discovered the changing world of benefits was going to mean I needed to get Medicaid and work out all the paperwork. To my surprise, although I could get Braille for Social Security, from my bank, and from my power company, I could not get Braille for Medicaid services. And that seemed a little odd to me and a little inconsistent. I was thinking there must be something wrong here. I must not be doing something right. It must be me. Again, it's with that internalized negativity about blindness that I continue to fight against in myself that, oh, it must be my fault, right? A lot of us can relate to that. However, by going through the process of filing complaints, well, first you make phone calls and you try to make friends. Then you start to raise issues and concerns. And after that, you start to file complaints. So filing complaints, then making appeals, and losing appeals led down this road of a court case a lawsuit that needed to be filed. For the sake of an ongoing case, I will simply say that we very much have regulations on our side through the Rehab Act and through the ADA and other federal mandates that blind individuals are entitled to receive effective communication through any federally funded program. So I'm simply wanting to share that The Federation, again, has invested in me and in this state through legal resources, along with the connections to other advocacy organizations. There are often teams involved, not just NFB, but partnering with others, and I personally am very thankful for that. So to summarize where things are at, the current lawsuit, to me it is important that it goes in our favor, and you can help with that. You can reach out to me at I'll share contact info. You can reach out to the National Center of the National Federation of the Blind and share your concerns about not receiving effective communication for Medicaid, SNAP, voc rehab, other state-provided services that you are entitled to as a blind Hoosier. The important thing here is I think the lawsuit is less important than the fact that we stand up and continue to both defend our rights and improve our community. I think that I'm in a position in some ways of privilege. I am financially stable. I have a college degree, and I understand the system. There are many who are not able to be in this room who may not have that opportunity. And I think it's very important for us all to understand our own privilege and to use that for others. So I'm just here to encourage each and every one of you, in whatever way you can, would you continue to push the opportunity forward to those who do not yet have that or who have not yet come to understand it for themselves. We can model this. We can model the hope that we've found in the Federation in how we do our daily lives, especially to others in the blind community. So I'll give my contact info real quick, and then I'll pass on the mic. My name is Christopher Meyer. My phone number is area code 765-480-2978. And my email is christopher.meyer007@gmail.com, christopher.meyer007@gmail.com. Would encourage you to reach out if you have any issues or if you just need any encouragement. This isn't the only project that I've got involved in. I've done some advocacy work for the Federation in other areas here in Indiana, and we would love to support you if you have other needs. It's a joy to be here, and I just encourage each and every one of you to continue to find hope through the Federation. Thanks.
We got one more presenter, and Lee, will you make your way over? Yeah. As you guys see, we have advocacy on every level in this state, and you know, from discrimination with kids being taken away, being blind, with education being in jeopardy because you're blind, and Lee's case, he's going to talk about some of that and what we can do about it, and his case. Go, Lee.
Good morning, Federationists. We have a lot of work to do here in Indiana, as you all know, and it's not. It's going to take all of us to work together to achieve our goals and to bring about some of the rights that are being denied here in Indiana. Many cases go unknown regarding parents of blind children. The challenges that they face oftentimes they go unknown, basically because of the laws in the state of Indiana. You know, the privacy laws that they have. Oftentimes, these laws. What was that, Brother Brown? And yeah, the lack of the laws as well. Thank you, Brother Brown. But these laws that aren't in place for parents of blind children and people with disabilities. Oftentimes, parents are, you know, blind parents are in fear. Once they conceive a child, they shouldn't have to have fear. In 1923, when President Brown was born, the Supreme Court passed the law that everyone has the inalienable rights to pursue and have families. That these challenges for people with disabilities maybe have not been included in those decisions. And we have cases right here in Indiana. You just heard of one. And I was studying on her case when the Court of Appeals ruled against the trial court about her being denied those rights. And she's. It was so nice to hear her speak and the encouragement that she has simply because she has the backing of this organization, the National Federation of the Blind. And I tell you, there's another case that we have pending here in the state of Indiana regarding a parent that is being denied her rights as well. So this has helped us as we move forward in Indiana with some of our constituents at the state legislature. Now, these constituents of ours, we got them basically on film and on our television show, the National Federation of Blind Newsline. I throw that pun in there, but they're on our show. Three representatives with the state that says that they will come on and back this bill. It's a process, and it's a long process. So we've started the process, and we've had our executive director of advocacy and policy, John Perret, at the national office. He's been coordinating with myself and President Brown and the legislatures on how to proceed with this. So he sent me a lot of information, which we forwarded over to our constituents at the State House. Right now, if you want to know, there's 14 states in the United States here that has passed the parental rights bill. And we are really working here in Indiana to make sure that we are included. So we have sent a lot of information regarding the parental rights bills, and we also have a template for that was established in 2016 at the National Convention with Resolution 1608. You can go to nfb.org and find that resolution and read it and consume it, because we're going to need your help when we go to the hearings here in Indiana. The problem with this upcoming session is that they're only going to introduce 5 bills simply because it's the short session. So we are really, we got the information. We're asking for you to stay by the phone. Those of you are parents, I've talked to a few of you, and we're going to need your support when you come down and give your testimony, because it's going to be very important that you give your testimony so that we can get this bill passed in Indiana. As we say, teamwork makes the dream work. Yeah. And so, you know, if we don't. The mayor kind of alluded to this in a way. you know, he said, you have to be, you know, you have to be heard. It was mentioned, but it was, you know, he mentioned it. But if you're not visible and you're not being heard and they don't know of our issues, then it still goes unnoticed. We stay in our circle. We stay secluded and we're not being heard. We talk amongst each other. But our legislators need to hear from us. They need to hear from you. I would say that one part of our legislation that we had passed, we got on, Congressman Carson. This is what we done. We had a lot of members that couldn't make it to the Washington seminar, so we decided to have something like Indianapolis seminar. So the chapter went to the office of Congressman Carson, and I had about 8 members that went, and they were like, okay, we're going there, but what do we talk about? What do we say? I didn't want them to practice anything. So when we got there and we were speaking to his aides, and one of the aides chimed in from Washington, D.C., and we started talking about our problems. We started talking about Access Technology Affordability Act. We started talking about the unemployment rate. We started talking about parental rights. And it got their attention. And it's been very hard to get Andre Carson, Congressman Carson, to sign on to anything with us as blind people. And you guys from Indiana know that from going to the Washington seminar, that his grandmother, Julia Carson, she was a great backer. But we couldn't pin this guy down. And every time I meet him and talk to him, it's, oh, I know all about that bill, and I know you don't. So he always want to talk about, well, you really dress sharp, and, you know, we really like, you know. And I said, man, I'm not here to talk about being dressed. I'm here to talk about our bills. We're talking about our rights. And this President Brown told me when we went to, as he went to, everyone went to his office in D.C. at the seminar, what kind of tickled me. And now he's got this word in his mouth, my beloved. You know, if we're your beloved, then stand up and fight for us. You know? So Florence Myers and I, McSwain and I, and some of the other members, they spoke sincerely from their hearts about their challenges. And that's very touching when you hear people speak from sincerity, because that's a moving tool. And you all have that tool inside of you. And I want to appeal to you to utilize that tool so that we can get other things passed. It's all about us, is all about our community, is all about our families, so that we can have those parental rights, that we can have employment, we can have the right tools to education. And I want to commend our president once again. I received a phone call from a lady that was not receiving her information from Medicare and Medicaid in the format that she suggested. She wanted large print. So it's just like Christopher's case. So I listened to her. I wrote it all up. I sent it over to President Brown. And within a few days, we heard back from Nationals that our attorneys is going to be calling the young lady. And I don't know if you know this yet, President Brown, or not, but the young lady now, case has been taken on and been added to Christopher's case. Yeah. Yeah. So the National Federation of the Blind of Indiana, we're doing our part, and we're going to make sure that we do our part to make sure that our legislators get this the proper information so that when they go to the legal service the legal service agency, which drafts the template that we're putting forth. I've asked Tammy Hollingsworth and President Brown and anyone else that may want to sit on the drafting of that to make sure that it's drafted properly when the time comes. We'll be there to make sure that this legal service agency drafts this bill properly so that when it goes to hearing, that it'll be drafted the way that we want it to be drafted. And we can draft that off the template that's already been established on the national level. So that's something that we're not going to hope that it's going to get done. It's going to get done. So, and I do really believe in our constituents at the State House. And I want you guys to stay prayerful and mindful because this is nothing, this is not a joke. This is nothing that we just want to say, well, oh, well. You know, this is something that we really need to do in the state of Indiana. We need to make sure that we get this parental rights bill passed. And if we have to go down there to, I don't know how many of you guys want to go down and protest and put some signs up if we have to. but those are things that we have to do. We have to be seen, you know, and we have to be heard. Because if you look around at the groups that are making the noise, what they say, the squeaky wheel gets greased, you know. So, you know, let's squeak a little bit. And outside our own family to let society know that, hey, we do exist. We do have families. We do. We are under the law, and our rights are being violated. And we don't want to continue to allow ourselves to be violated because we don't say anything. So it's. I want to say thank you once again for the time, President Brown, and we'll keep moving forward on this. And once again, as we stated here, teamwork is going to make this dream work. God bless you all.
So we're going to see if anybody got any questions for our panelists. Okay, our national rep has the first question.
Okay, so this is for Lee. We talked a little bit about this in the parent meeting, but when you draft this legislation, I think there ought to be a provision wherein if the Child Protective Services, for example, takes a child away from a family for no reason other than they are blind or disabled, that stays on their record. I think we ought to have something in there that says that if discrimination is found, that that is expunged from their record. Because think about it. Yeah. You got my blind couple in Oregon. You can just imagine strolling down the street with their baby and somebody calls Child Protective Services. The first thing they do is they're going to open up their file and they're going to go, oh, look at that. They have a record, which automatically is going to make that caseworker assume the worst. And I think that we ought to have something in there that says that they, if they make that error, they need to fix it. Clean it up.
Sounds good to me. So why don't you email me that information there? Okay. Okay, and there's something else I want to bring to your attention real quick. There was a radio, there's a radio station that's very popular. It's called The Breakfast Club.
Oh, yeah.
So many of you seem like you've heard of this. So I don't know where the National Federation of the Blind is on this because if, for those of you that haven't heard, the young lady, she was a freshman in college and at 20 years old, she called in just to make a comment to these guys at the Breakfast Club. Now, these gentlemen took her call and once she said, well, she's blind. And she wants to, you know, she's having problems getting babysitting jobs. And before she could get it out her mouth real good, you're blind and babysitting. You know, I wouldn't let you babysit my child, you know. And then, you know, well, they want me to take the child to the park and cross the street. And cross the street? You know, we wouldn't let you have our child crossing the street. They just berated her, and then they went further with it and started putting it on a call-in line where people were calling in. And you know society was all negative, and there was several people that did call in and say, well, my parents were blind, or my auntie was blind. They raised me being blind. And these guys was like, that's ridiculous. There's no sense to this, you know. And so it was really bad. So I don't know where the National Federation of the Blind stands on that, but I do know that President Mark Riccobono was trying to get in touch with them. President Brown, you heard any more about that?
I haven't heard any more on our stands or what we're going to take. I'm sure it's going to come up in Houston, though, for sure. But here's what I can tell you, and this is my own perspective and the perspective of the National Federation of the Blind. We can't legislate our way out of ignorance, but what we can do is we can educate. Absolutely, they can apologize. We can't legislate ignorance. We can't legislate attitudes. But we can educate ignorance, and we can educate attitudes. And that's what we're going to do. And that's what we have been doing ever since that show came out. But it is a reference to where society is. Dr. Jernigan said a long time ago, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And so sometimes that is true, but you know what? We keep working it. We keep making it work for us and for all blind people around the country. Any other questions? Let me hear from Chico and then Rebecca. Hey. All right.
Microphone.
They don't call him Chico for nothing. All right.
Yeah, I'm a blind parent, and my son that I take care of occasionally, he is Down syndrome, and I take care of him under my conditions as well. And I've been trying to get an opportunity to go to the Washington to express my concerns and how I and show the people that me as a blind parent can still take care of my child and have him, you know, take care of him and he has issues as far as catheterization and just stuff like that. And I do this and I need the people to know that because I'm blind doesn't mean that I'm going to give up.
That's
one of my biggest things, that I am not giving up.
That's right.
And great. They need to know this.
That's right.
I'm not the only one. There's another person that I'm know this, and he's a blind parent. He's
so
got
Chico,
five
now
kids.
You're in the South Bend chapter.
Right.
We in the National Federation of Blind at our board meeting last night said that we are going to pay for rooms for guys and girls to go to Washington to express just what you talked about.
Right.
Your feelings about being a blind parent and about your parental rights being violated.
Yes.
And we want you to go. You get with your chapter, see if they can give you some monies to get a plane ticket.
Right.
We got a room for you.
All right.
We got a bed in that room for you. How about that?
Thank you. God
All
bless
right.
you. Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
Let me see. Hold on. Yeah, Rebecca.
Where's
first,
she
hold
Which
on.
Way?
Rebecca.
I'm sorry. You're to my left. That's right. We got to talk. Let's work as a team here. There we go. Where's she at?
In the front.
I'm coming. There we go. Keep talking. There we go.
Okay.
There, right.
Thank you. First of all, to respond to the first conversation you had, Lee, I can echo that sentiments with the parenting thing because I struggled with that with Josiah. The hospital didn't want to let me go with Josiah, but by the grace of God, it all worked out. So I'm very sentimental to that situation. For this last thing, my best friend had written in on the Tom Joyner Morning Show about me being an incredible mother, which I so appreciated. And they had called me. It was like the Mom Tuesday of the month is what they had. It was like a special thing they had going on for a while. So she wrote in on me, and they had called me and said I'd won $1,000. So anyways, you know, Tom, Anthony Brown, which was the comedian on his show, Yeah, J. Anthony Brown. He was a comedian, and he had heard that I was blind. And so he's like, what? She's blind? How does she cook for him? And how does he do this? And how does she do that? So the person who had who works on their show had called me and had all kinds of questions, because they were the public wants to know these things. They don't know, you know. So it is. It's incredibly important that we just educate them on who what we're capable of doing. Because Josiah didn't make it to 12 just because. I mean, you know, by the grace of God, he gave me the ability to get him to 12 years old without any broken bones or anything. And no one cohabitated with me. Nobody lived with me. My siblings didn't come and, you know, and help and all that kind of stuff. It was truly by the grace of God and my ability to raise him as a mom. So the public just has to be properly educated. And after, what was her, Sybil. After Sybil said, well, she just got skills, he, of course, apologized. But, you know, it's just them being properly educated. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Good job, Rebecca. Okay, I just want to reiterate to Chico and anyone else out there, you can also advocate in your own community, your own hometown. You can go to your congressman's office, as we indicated that we did, and the success we had with the Circle City chapter, going to our congressman's office and let them, his aides, know. And so you can go to your congressman's office, get a group, or just go individually, just with your heartfelt sentiments, and go there with the, you know, with the facts and let them know they're at that office, and you can start building your case there. And so when you go to the Washington seminar, your case will already be built. So that's my recommendation to that, Mr. Kokomo.
Mr. President,
Joe.
Here we come, Joe.
One question,
here we come,
right.
Joe. Here we go.
Where is a copy of this parental rights bill that he had in New York? Because I haven't seen it. I would like to contact my
congressman,
Senator
Topkin,
too.
Yeah. Well, as we indicated earlier, that there's a template that the National Federation of the Blind has, a national template. Now, this template is out there. You can go to nfb.org and find the template. As we said, the resolution for that, and ours in Indiana specifically, is being put together. But we're taking it off the templates from the other 14 states that have already been approved.
Let me give us some background.
We that means they're working on the bill.
Let me say something. If you guys remember last year when we, the Parents Division really wanted this bill instituted in the state of Indiana, and so did all of us. Although our parents were small, some of us stepped up and said, just because they can't get it done, we'll help get it done. And so one of the things that happened was we tried to get it introduced, and if you guys remember, we missed the deadline to get it introduced. If you guys remember that from last year. So what we did is we didn't just give up on it. We're going to continue to fight. The bill has not been written yet. We do now have a co-sponsor. So Lee said, President Brown, can I help work on this parental rights bill? Guess what I said? Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Can I help the parents with this? Absolutely. All of us have an obligation and a right to work on anything that we want that affect blind people in this state and around the country, because that's what we do. And that's what we're going to do with this parental rights bill. We're going to get it written. We're going to get it done. We're going to try to pass it in this short legislative session. If we don't get it done this year, we're going to bring it back next year. If we don't get it done next year, we're going to bring it back until we get it done. That's what we're going to do.